Thanks to a generous donor, we've purchased a building for the new studios and offices of Issues Etc., Lutheran Public Radio, and The Word of the Lord Endures Forever.
The donor will match up to $200,000 for the purchase and renovation.
The entire cost is approximately $375,000.
You can view an architect's rendering and make a special tax-deductible gift at issuesetc.org
or call 618-223-8385.
Thanks for your consideration.
Joe Biden and the radical left are now coming for our freedom of speech. They want to bully us into submission. If they get their way, it will no longer be the silent majority. It will be the silenced majority. This has to stop. Freedom of expression used to be a liberal value, at least before the radical left took over.
I think often about my ancestors who struggled for freedom. And as I think of those giants and their broad shoulders, I also think about Joe Biden, who says, if you aren't voting for me, you ain't black. Who argued that Republicans would put us back in chains. Who says there is no diversity of thought in the black community. Mr. Vice President, look at me. I am black. We are not all the same, sir. I am not in chains. My mind is my own. And you can't tell me how to vote because of the color of my skin.
If these problems were easy to solve, previous presidents would have done so. But you don't achieve different results by doing things the same way. Washington has not changed Donald Trump. Donald Trump has changed Washington.
So tonight I say to all Americans, this is the most important election in the history of our country. There has never been such a difference between two parties or two individuals in ideology, philosophy, or vision than there is right now. Together we are unstoppable. Together we are unbeatable. Because together we are the proud citizens of the United States of America. I love you all. God bless you and God bless America. Thank you very much.
Those are some of the sounds from last week's Republican National Convention. Some of contrast with the Democratic National Convention. The biggest contrast, of course, that cheering. There were crowds at the Republican National Convention, and for the president's acceptance speech, a pretty substantial crowd there on the lawn of the White House. What were some other differences? What was the high point? What was the low point? Greetings and welcome back to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the new studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We'll be talking about the Republican National Convention. Molly Hemingway joins us from Fox News. We'll spend some time with Pastor Ted Geese looking at another attempt to take the Gospels and the life of Jesus to the screen. It's a TV series called The Chosen. Joining us to talk about the Republican National Convention, Molly Hemingway. She's a regular guest, a Fox News contributor, senior editor of The Federalist, and co-author of the book Justice on Trial. Molly, welcome back.
It's great to be here with you.
How do you compare and contrast the RNC convention and the DNC convention?
Well, it was really surprising, I think, for a lot of people to watch the Republican National Convention. The Democratic National Convention was a bit of a grind to get through. It was difficult to watch. It was boring. The speeches were dark. It was a very pessimistic convention. And just production quality-wise, it looked beneath what a normal local television show might be. And so usually Democrats are much better at stagecraft than Republicans. I think back to the 2008 convention where when Barack Obama was nominated, they had these like beautiful Greek columns on a stage, and it was just beautifully lit and very thoughtfully produced. And then you went to the convention, I think it was in Minneapolis, for Republicans. And there was like a big green screen behind where speakers were speaking. It just looked awful. And it was in a dank, crowded, tiny coliseum of some type, and it just had a totally different feel. This was exactly the opposite. The Democratic convention was rather dark and poorly produced, and the Republican convention was one of the most compelling television experiences that people might remember in recent years. Rather than highlighting politicians, although there were plenty of politicians highlighted, it highlighted the stories of everyday Americans and what they had experienced under the Trump administration and how they credited the Trump administration or other Republicans for helping them out. It was really well done and surprisingly different from a typical Republican convention.
What would you say was the high point of the Republican convention?
Well, there were many things that were interesting there. I think one thing that was particularly noteworthy was Republicans have been trying to get more Black Americans to vote for them for many years, and they've not done a very good job of that. I think the percentages of Black people voting Democrat are in the 90 percentile. Now, Trump did better than previous Republican presidential candidates in getting Black men in particular to vote for him. But what was interesting about this convention was that it wasn't just a token plea for Black votes. It was a major theme of the convention, and it was based not in meaningless platitudes, but in actual policy arguments. Night after night, there were multiple people speaking about the Republicans' all-out desire to get more Black people voting based on policy reasons. So some of them were specific, but very few, like funding for historically Black colleges and universities, which had been a Trump administration policy. But a lot of it was about improving the economic situation for Black men and Black women in terms of job growth and wage growth. And there were just a lot of different appeals, like criminal justice reform, which benefits both Black and white Americans. And it was genuine, and it was relentless, and it was night after night with really powerful speakers. But I think the big highlight was what I just said earlier. It was the stories of everyday Americans as opposed to politicians. Politicians just come off boring, but these people who were telling stories, whether they were related to foreign policy or domestic policy, that really reinforced why these policy differences matter, I think was very effective. I'd love to know actually who put on the Republican convention because it was done just that well.
What was the low point in your opinion?
Oh, this is a very personal thing. So you will not hear other pundits say this. I didn't love all the politician speeches. And so usually what would be viewed as a highlight for other people, I found a little bit boring. But I don't know. I don't think there were that many. I don't really think there was any low light. And I'm not trying to avoid the question, but I can't really think of much that went poorly for the Republicans.
So let's run the race marked out for us. Let's fix our eyes on Oh Glory and all she represents. Let's fix our eyes on this land of heroes and let their courage inspire. And let's fix our eyes on the author and perfecter of our faith and our freedom. And never forget that where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. That means freedom always wins.
Molly, what did you make of Vice President Pence's reference there to Hebrews 12 and other Bible passages?
Well, let me first say that Vice President Pence had a very effective speech. The setting was very well chosen, Fort McHenry in Maryland, where the flag flew that inspired the Star Spangled Banner, and his speech was very well received. A lot of Christians had problems with this, and rightly so, this particular passage. There were multiple problems with what he just said. What he was doing was this time-honored practice of civil religion in America where you blend Christianity with American ideals, and it's always at the loss of Christianity. This passage is beautiful. I mean, the references he was making were beautiful because they were allusions to the cross of Christ. But he was turning it instead into the flag being the thing that is what we value most highly. The one thing I want to say first off that was a problem is he said, I can't remember what the exact words were, but don't forget that where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom, something like that. That's just theologically, I mean, that's true in a religious sense, but that's not what he meant it. He meant it in a political sense. And politically speaking, the Spirit of the Lord has been in many places where there is no freedom. And in fact, that's what's beautiful about the Christian faith is that it applies at all times, no matter what governmental system you're under. And the Spirit of the Lord was present in communist Cuba when dissidents were being killed for being Christian. It doesn't mean that it wasn't there. It just means that the government was evil. The other big problem is that he was conflating deep Christian meaning and symbols with American governance. And while this is a great country, and while we do thank God for the freedom that we have, we should never be confused about what is more important, the cross of Christ or the American flag. It's not even close. And so a lot of people who generally support Vice President Pence and, in fact, really value him being in the Trump administration as vice president felt that that was really indefensible language he used.
What did you make of President Trump's acceptance speech?
So first off, I just want to say the Democratic convention did not go so well, but the media claimed that it went very well, which was not an objective reading of the situation. Every speech that was given, no matter how dark and dystopic, was treated as if it were really beautiful. Joe Biden stood up and gave a 20-minute speech without failing, and everybody said that this was a major success because Republicans have questioned his verbal acuity and energy and, you know, cognitive decline and all these kinds of things. Trump, by contrast, gave, I don't remember exactly how long it was. I was listening to it, but I didn't check how long it was, but I think it was over an hour-long speech, running through all of his accomplishments, talking about what he wanted to accomplish in the next administration, hitting some historical themes, hitting some optimistic ideas about the future and whatnot. I do not think it was a particularly beautifully composed speech, but I do think it was effective in doing what it needed to do to end a very good convention and showing President Trump as president, which is the thing his critics are always trying to keep him from doing. And he didn't give the most effective speech of the convention, I would say. There were many others from everyday Americans that were. But it did show him as president leading a very happy and successful political party. It's kind of like Kamala Harris's speech was not particularly eloquent or inspirational, but she kind of needed to be that way to show she wasn't going to overshadow the presidential candidate or annoy anybody. And so counterintuitively, I actually thought Kamala Harris gave a good speech for what she needed to do. And then President Trump, this setting right before the White House, before a crowd of enthusiastic supporters with fireworks at the end. You know, there's just no question it was a very effective end to an effective convention.
Well, the Democrats spent a lot of time during their convention criticizing President Trump about his response to COVID-19. Did the Republicans answer those criticisms? Molly Hemingway is our guest. We're talking about the Republican National Convention. Thanks to a generous donor, we've purchased a building for the new studios and offices of Issues Etc., Lutheran Public Radio, and The Word of the Lord Endures Forever.
The donor will match up to $200,000 for the purchase and renovation.
The entire cost is approximately $375,000.
You can view an architect's rendering and make a special tax-deductible gift at issuesetc.org.
Or call 618- 223-8385.
Thanks for your consideration.
Ars moriendi, the art of dying well. If death is the punishment for sin, then how does one die well? Well, that's the question we ask and answer in the September issue of the Lutheran Witness. We ask and answer the most common questions, fears, and doubts faced by Lutherans and Christians as they approach death. To subscribe, visit cph.org/witness. cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.
Independent and in the black for 12 years and running, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Did you know that for over 40 years, Lutheran Church Extension Fund has had the humble privilege of supporting Lutheran Church Missouri Synod ministries with low-cost loans and resources? This is Rahema Kavuga, Synod Relations Manager of Lutheran Church Extension Fund. Because of faithful investors like you, we've been able to help church workers, congregations, schools, and organizations. To learn how you can get involved, call 800-843-8233.
Do you know any military veterans in your church or community? Do you have a passion to support and reach them with the gospel of Jesus Christ? Then Operation Barnabas is for you. Called by Christ's love, Operation Barnabas engages, empowers, and equips LCMS faith communities to provide hope, healing, and support to military-connected persons living in their community. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the Republican National Convention. Molly Hemingway, a Fox News contributor, senior editor at The Federalist, and co-author of the book Justice on Trial, is our guest. Molly, during their week of their convention, the Democrats spent a lot of time criticizing President Trump about his response to COVID-19. Those criticisms, of course, continue. Do you think that Republicans did a good job of answering those criticisms?
The Democratic Convention seemed to focus on two main themes, and then there were some other themes underneath it. One was that Donald Trump is a bad orange man, and then the second was that coronavirus is going to kill us as a country. And so optically, they kept putting this out there. They emphasized that they were speaking before empty, cavernous auditoriums. They put masks on when they didn't need to. Like the end of the Democratic Convention, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris put on masks, even though they should be safe to be around each other as people who work around each other all the time. And they went outside and wore these masks to wave at cars that were 20 feet apart from each other, filled with people who were Democratic supporters. Optically, it could not have been more different than Republicans, who definitely mentioned the coronavirus and what they'd done to deal with the coronavirus. And there was even one part that talked about people who had survived coronavirus and whatnot. But optically, it was so different. People seemed much more free and able to be around each other. The final setting of being in front of a large crowd of people that were outdoors in the open air. I mean, they're outdoors precisely because of coronavirus, but they didn't seem so hampered by it. So I thought that even apart from the actual words that were being spoken at the convention, just visually, you could tell this was two totally different parties. One wanting to continue lockdowns and ban children from schools and keep people from going back to work. And another one saying, America, we can do this.
How would you describe and rate the media coverage of the RNC convention?
Well, I think that it went so well for Republicans that the media couldn't be as critical as they would normally have been. But of course, they were still very critical and they were sort of nitpicky. I think they were trying to find problems with anything that was being done. And I think they were caught totally unawares. I remember one reporter saying, well, I guess all that stuff that we heard about how the Republican convention was going to be a chaotic nightmare turned out not to be true. And I think that Republicans might have even led the media to believe that they were going to have a difficult convention just to make the impact of not having a difficult convention all the greater. But in general, the media have chosen to become open partisans in support of Joe Biden and the Democratic Party. And that is not good for media and it's not good for the country. But one of the effects is I think people sort of don't pay attention to what they're saying anymore because they just know. They know that no matter what happens, the media are going to come out against the Republican convention. And so it decreases the import of those statements when they make them.
There was a juxtaposition, of course, for the final days of the Republican convention with new violence breaking out, in this case, Kenosha. How did that figure into the mix for you? How does it continue to figure in the mix, especially with regard to media coverage?
So when a political party has a convention, this is when they get the most favorable media treatment. They get to control the message. It's a very difficult time for the opposing party. So it's true when the Democrats are running their convention or when the Republicans are running theirs. And so each party tries to do a little bit of counter programming. You know, they put their candidate out in a high profile way while the other party's convention is going on. And what went really poorly for Democrats is the counter programming that they offered were riots in not just Kenosha, but other cities across the country run by Democratic mayors and Democratic states frequently where nothing is being done to actually address the violence. And so that helps Republicans have a much more effective message because not only are they speaking against the violence and the murders and the riots and the arson and the looting and all of this, but Democrats aren't, you know, these are Democratic base supporters, basically, you know, these are anti-Trump protesters conveying that they will burn cities down. And the Democrats completely squandered their opportunity to speak against this issue or present themselves as more moderate in between the rioters and the Republicans by not only not saying anything about the riots during their convention, which is scandalous, but in some cases even seeming to support them or encourage them and their cause. And so this, I think, was a major error of the Democrats. Not so much what they did say during the convention, although that wasn't a huge success, but more than anything, what they didn't say. And after months of not saying anything, it's very difficult to go back and be like, we'd like to redo our convention speech. We'd like to claim we're against this violence now. Well, it's a little late and it's a little too little.
Can the media pull off the trick of downplaying the violence in the streets while at the same time trying to blame Trump for all of it?
Yeah, that seems to be their effort, is to say there are no riots and also the riots are Trump's fault. They've actually been a completely confused mess the entire month-long ordeal of denying that the riots are happening and trying to blame President Trump for it. It doesn't work in part because we see what their signs are. These are not Trump supporters out there. These are people who write expletives with the Trump name and who claim that they're against America. We saw that the Democrats didn't condemn the violence or the riots when they had a week to do so. And so it's just a very difficult message to pull off. And I don't think it works. Now, Joe Biden said in the aftermath that unless he's elected president, that the violence will get worse. And I think that's an even worse response to the riots, is to try and sort of use them to blackmail American voters into voting for him. It worked early on in the campaign when they said, oh, if you want to kind of turn down the noise on the Trump administration, just vote him out and then all that chaos will go away. Well, Republicans did a good job of presenting the case that they are, in fact, not chaotic, that they're achieving great policy goals, but also that if you blackmail people, usually if someone acquiesces to the blackmail, that just makes the blackmail worse. So this idea that people have to vote for Biden or else the violence will get worse, I think people know enough to know usually the proper response to a blackmailer, if you've done nothing wrong in particular, is to tell them, no, I'm not going to acquiesce to your demands just because you're threatening me.
So with that said, Molly, where do the campaigns go from here?
Oh, well, it's so interesting, and things keep changing every month. You know, we were led to believe in June and July that the election was over and that Republicans would be all eliminated in a tidal blue wipeout, and now it seems quite different. I think the way that the Democratic campaigns are operating suggests that they don't believe the polls that are put out by the media. There's also a noticeable lack of polls post-convention, which probably means that the numbers show Trump doing better than the pollsters would like to put out there at the time being. But it's a long campaign and it's going to get complicated. I think both campaigns will probably start focusing on how to get out as much vote as possible, with the push to move to mail-in balloting, which is ripe for exploitation by bad actors. I think both parties and both campaigns will be hyper-vigilant about preventing fraud from the other team and also maximizing their ability to get out the vote. But you know, so much depends on whether Democrats can quell the riots without seeming to have succumbed to Republican messaging about quelling riots. And I'm not sure if they can accomplish either of those things.
Finally, there has been some confusion about the future of the debates, although they are planned. Nancy Pelosi added to that confusion last week by flatly saying she didn't think that Biden should. She didn't say he wouldn't, but she didn't think he should debate the president. What do you make of that?
You know, there's been a lot of Democratic anxiety about Joe Biden debating, and I understand why that is. He's lost his edge. He struggled in the first few Democratic primary debates, and it was bad for him. But I actually think that their anxiety is overplaced. I think he will do fine in debates. He is a natural, you know, jokester. He kind of likes to talk. He does pretty well when he's unleashed. I think he'll do fine. And if you recall that last Democratic primary debate, if not the last two, he actually did pretty well. He seemed zoned in and focused, and I think they might have been a little shorter than the three-hour debates. And so I think they should not worry so much. Clearly, they are worried. So I imagine we'll still see the media and other Democrats pushing for fewer debates or more favorable conditions for Joe Biden. But I almost think they don't really matter that much anymore after the difference in the conventions. I mean, they do matter. They absolutely matter. But I don't think they matter as much as people thought they would before these two conventions.
Do you think Pelosi's statement there was an attempt to lower expectations on Vice President Biden going into debates that most certainly will be held?
It was that. It was also part of a continued Democratic effort to refuse to accept the 2016 election results. And so much of the Democratic and media response to Trump has been to pretend that he's not the president. And so saying you shouldn't debate the incumbent president in a race for the presidency is an attempt to continue that. Whether Americans will fall for that again or whether they're growing tired of this talking point will remain to be seen. But Joe Biden really has, I think the debates are important for Joe Biden. He had three opportunities to really help himself in this campaign. The first was with who he picked for vice president, and he messed that up by picking Kamala Harris, who generated no excitement and has a lot of downsides. He had the convention, a full week of free media coverage to set whatever argument he wanted to put forth, and it was just completely squandered. So his last real opportunity are these debates. He has to not just do them, he has to do a really good job with them. And if he doesn't, I don't think the fundamentals of the race change that much.
Molly Hemingway is a Fox News contributor, senior editor of The Federalist, and co-author of the book Justice on Trial. Molly, thanks.
Thank you.
When we come back, there's going to be another attempt to put the life of Jesus on the screen, in this case, a TV series called The Chosen. Pastor Ted Geese will give us a review. Stay tuned. Church and state, communion fellowship, the church year, baptism, Lutheranism. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August is a simple explanation series. It's a pack of 20 pamphlets with solid biblical guidance on various Christian topics. A simple explanation pamphlet is perfect for outreach programs, new member classes, and in the church pews. Learn more at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. A simple explanation series.
This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we'll continue our study of St. Matthew with prayer, the Our Father, fasting, where your treasure is, and no anxiety? Join me, Pastor Will Wheaton, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily 15-minute verse-by-verse Bible study on demand at thewordendures.org and on the Lutheran Public Radio app.
Faith Lutheran Church and School in Plano, Texas preaches Christ crucified. Join us each Lord's Day to hear law and gospel preaching and to receive the Lord's Supper. Our classical preschool through grade 12 Lutheran school is second to none. The school serves home educators, too, with online classes in the high school. We are located at 1701 East Park Boulevard in Plano, Texas. Reach us by phone at 972-423-7448 or on the web at www.flsplano.org.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211. 452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Come and experience firsthand by sitting down in classes and actually hearing professors, coming to chapel, which is always the high point of the day, to hear the Word of God and to lift our voices in song.
Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Paul Grimm on why you should consider visiting Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Spend time talking to professors. I mean, there's not a professor here who will not be willing to take time, whether it's after chapel during the coffee hour or just to come into one study and sit down and talk for a while, to answer questions, to help them to get a sense of, A, do they want to be a pastor or a deaconess? And then B, is this the right place? And, well, maybe C would be the question, is now the right time for them to make that decision?
If you've contemplated the vocation of pastor or deaconess, contact Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155, or send an email to admission@ctsfw.edu.